You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Russ isn't going to play this weekend, is he? Like, are you 100% sure Russ isn't going to play?
Well, we did throw out the possibility that he could have taught himself to throw left-handed in this time.
All I'm saying is he was limited, not absent from the practice field yesterday.
Surgery on my finger and he's limited?
Well, he was limited. That's what it came out. Now, maybe this just means I need to rethink how I look at the limited versus non-participant in practice thing. But when I saw him there, and I know he can do everything that doesn't involve his hands. Mike Salk Show, by the way, here, 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com as well. Justin's here. Maura is back after abandoning us for the day yesterday. So, Maura, good to have you back. You missed a lot of great, great conversation about being out on the field at T-Mobile. And we talked a lot about Justin and his kid in a candy store kind of jubilation, I would call it, exuberance. But Maura, we should point out today, with a couple of beautiful catches to help lead our team to victory in the fly ball competition.
Oh, and her base running speed was also what led us to victory.
I did not see that. It was after I left, so Maura ran the bases.
I did. It was me, Brad Adams, and Jake Heaps.
Okay, good. I'm surprised they didn't choose Manny Chow since he was wearing boots. So, yeah, I'm glad to see that they went with you.
Much better. I was wearing these like Puma slide-on sneakers that aren't exactly made for running, but okay.
You gotta come prepared.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I thought if I didn't come prepared that maybe they wouldn't make me do anything and I could just eat the food.
Yes.
But then I kind of got pressured into doing stuff.
It also took me a minute to realize Manny Chow is Manny from Manny's Pale Ale. Like,
well,
that's Manny.
Yeah.
It took a second for that to kind of like adjust and click in.
Yeah. No, that's Manny. And he was wearing boots. So look, we all make choices when we're going to go take batting practice at a professional baseball field. And that was yours. That was his. No, I'm sure Russ isn't going to play. But I will admit that when I saw it yesterday, I was like, he's not going to play, is he? Like, there's not like a chance Russell ends up playing or something. I'm sure he won't, but he's trying to find a way. Like, there, I do believe that in the back of my mind, Russell's sitting there just like, okay, what if? What if I do? I know I've got a splint, but what if I try? I know he's trying. And actually, I worry a little bit about it that he'll find some way to set himself back a little bit because he's trying so hard to keep this going and keep this streak alive.
Like what they worried about with Mitch Haniger.
Yeah, specifically. And we'll talk a little bit, about Mitch later in the show. But I do think there's an element of that. Yeah, I do worry a little bit about it. How sweet was last night? If you're just a sports fan, October is always a great time for sports fans just because of the combination of the baseball postseason and the NFL. But now, as a local Seattle fan, honestly, adding the NHL into this and adding the Kraken into this is like a complete game changer. Where do you watch last night? I mean, I probably ended up watching more Kraken than anything else, but it was great. It was like, watch the Kraken. Okay, that game is over. Switch over to the football. Watch the end of it. Okay, Brady does this thing. Great. Switch over. Watch the end of just an epic baseball game, Game 5, with two rivals going back, you know. Just an awesome sports night on a Thursday night. So I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. The only problem with it is that with hockey being first, if you were watching the Kraken last night, were you taken aback by how much faster hockey is than every other sport? Because you then flip over to even the NFL, and it's a decent NFL game. It looks slow.
100% slow. Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
It blew my mind. And again, I don't watch a lot of hockey, so this is all out of context for me. And when you flip over and it's just trying to catch the puck for 15 seconds of action, really, really strange.
It was amazing to see how fast it is. And I know this my whole life, and I've kind of gone back and forth, so it was not unusual necessarily for me, but it is just a good reminder that when juxtaposed, it really does stand out with its speed, its energy, and just how constant it is, right? Baseball and football both have constant breaks, right? It's wait, gear up, craziness. Wait, gear up, craziness. And hockey is just nonstop. The flow of it is hardly ever interrupted. I mean, occasionally you're going to get a faceoff, you get the occasional timeout. Like, it's not constant, but it is pretty darn close. And so it, we got to see it all last night. Vince Dunn gets the he gets the first star, I think, from the players, and we'll play some of the sound in a moment. Not, but it's not for scoring a goal. He did not do anything on the score sheet last night. He did this instead.
Jared McCann, activity in back of the play. Vince Dunn in a battle with Yakov Trenin. Trenin has a size advantage here, but high marks to Vince Dunn for dropping the mitts and taking on this guy.
So if you didn't see it, hopefully you can hear it there from John Forslund. Vince Dunn got his butt kicked. Like, that's kind of how that went. And yet, he's the star of the game. Let me repeat it. Vince Dunn got his butt kicked. He did not win that fight. He lost that fight by any measure that you could possibly measure a fight by. Fighting a bigger dude who just came in and beat the heck out of him for a few seconds. But he took it. And let's go back to what John Buchagras told us. What is hockey about? It's about sacrifice. So let's follow what actually happened on the play, right? Dunn had a big hit a couple of minutes earlier. The first real big hit I think the Kraken have had this year. A couple minutes later, next shift out, he has another big hit, and this time some goon for Nashville takes exception and decides he wants to fight Vince Dunn
over. So neither of them were dirty hits?
Neither of them were dirty. They were just good, clean, hard hits.
Okay.
But the guy took exception, and the guy who was out there was some big dude who knows how to fight. So he comes over and says, all right, let's go, drop the gloves. Well, Jeremy Lauzon, who's also on the ice for the Kraken, is a little bit more of a fighter. He tries to step in on Dunn's behalf, saying, hey, you don't get to pick on him. I'm going to step in. And Dunn says, no, no. I got it. And he proceeds to take punches for 15 seconds, which doesn't sound like that long, until you're the one taking punches. So he leaves with a busted up face, goes to the penalty box for 5 minutes. But because he didn't do anything wrong, the guy from Nashville ends up getting an extra 2 minute penalty. So now the Kraken are on the power play, and guess what happens?
A 10 minute misconduct for the first one, a game misconduct for the second one. Here was just roughing. McCann with a shot. They score! That puck had eyes with Jaden Schwartz out in front. It's the first power play goal in the history of the Seattle Kraken. They tie the game at one.
So there you go. One thing leads to another leads to another. Bring your physical game with you, and it leads to a fight. And it leads to a power play. And it leads to a goal. And the next thing you know, Mark Giordano is pointing at you after the game as the star of the game.
I think, boys, this should go on the wall at our rink somewhere. First one ever. We all can look at it every day. We'll get something else for the hero of the game. I think I'm thinking Pirates of the Caribbean combat suiting for our team. But Dunner gets my player of the game.
Dunner, by the way, for Vince Dunn. So if you're trying to keep track of all the nicknames, it's Dunner for Vince Dunn. But I love it. I thought that was great the way it all went down. So the first win in the history of the Seattle Kraken takes place last night. Dave Hakstol, their head coach, pretty fired up.
And then you come into tonight, boys. Everybody doing their piece, right? Dosti out there blocking shots. Ruby, great performance. Where's Turbo? Oh, wait. I forgot to mention, Turbo's leading us in scoring, right? But what we wanted, fellas, first win in franchise history. Great job tonight, boys. Gio.
They could say the word boys forever, and I will laugh every time. Because in hockey, it's not B-O-Y-S, it's B-O-Y-C-E. Right? I think that's how it's pronounced. Come on, boys. Let's get out there, boys. Do our thing.
I am still trying to figure out the nicknames. They said Groovy there. Yeah. I tweeted out last night. I was trying to ask people because... Like, you know, when he has a good save, we're going to have to yell his name. Like, with the Bruins, it's Tuukka for right. Tuukka Rask. So I'm like, is it Groobs? Is it Groob? Is it Grooby?
I'm not comfortable with Grooby. They may be. They're on this team. They can call him that. I hope that in the crowd it's just a low Groob.
Yeah. I had an Avs fan message that the Avs just said Grew.
Yeah. Oh, Grew.
Yeah.
I think you could go Groobs. I think that has something to it.
I
but
like that, yeah.
I don't know about Grooby. I'm certainly not going to yell that at the at the game next Saturday night. Let's go Grooby. Like, it just doesn't have the appropriate ring to it. So, yeah, how about that? First win in the history of the franchise last night. And it was a good one. They played really well last night. I'll talk a little bit more about it later in the show. But if I sounded at all negative after the first game, it's because I didn't think they played very well, and I was a little concerned. I thought they played an excellent hockey game last night. They did it all. They were physical. They skated. Their chemistry looked better. They didn't stand around. They took a fight. Everything you want to see the team do. And by the way, for a group that's not supposed to score goals, they've scored 7 of them in 2 games. So, yeah, let's keep that up, man.
Biggest win in franchise history.
Biggest win in franchise history last night. Pretty cool. All right, coming up next, more on that. Plus, fans remember one frustrating loss to the Steelers, obviously. But trust me. John Schneider would like to avenge a different one. That and everything else you need to know next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's a Friday, getting you ready for a weekend Seahawks football on Sunday night. So you get to look forward to it all weekend long. It'll be the big weekend finale Sunday just after 5 o'clock on NBC. And, of course, you can hear it right here on 710 ESPN Seattle or on 710sports.com or over on our sister station, 97.3 Cairo FM. So a lot of options for you right now. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
I'll tell you what, for an interconference matchup that you don't get too often, the Steelers have some frustrating history for the Seahawks and their fans. I don't need to remind anybody of the 2005 Super Bowl. And while you can't blame the opponent necessarily for the bad calls, they certainly were the ones to benefit from them. But what about 2011? What about when the Steelers physically walloped them on their way to a 24-0 victory that dropped Seattle to 0-2 that year? It was after that game that John Schneider decided his team would never be physically dominated like that again. And for years, he was right. They were not. The mission now, though, is to get back again. For years, they were able to sustain a level of physical dominance that right now is missing. No Russell Wilson. It's going to be a pretty good place to start. Bring your physical game. Speaking of Russell, he was listed as a partial participant in practice yesterday. Does that mean he's going to play? I don't think so. But I'll tell you what. I'm not like 100% sure he's not going to play until he actually doesn't suit up for the game. And even then, we'll find out. Carson and Metcalf both did not practice yesterday. The bigger news there, Chris Carson, after Pete said that he would. So we'll keep an eye on that and see whether or not his neck is going to be good enough for him to go. Obviously, he is a crucial piece in this thing if they're going to try to survive without their starting quarterback. As for Pittsburgh, as we expected, no Juju Smith-Schuster. An old friend, Akella Witherspoon, who was here in preseason, missed practice yesterday with a coach's decision designation. Not sure what that means. Another full weekend in the NFL. Rams at New York on Sunday to take on the Giants. New York just 1-4 on the year. Cardinals at Cleveland trying to stay unbeaten. Seattle becomes big Baker Mayfield fans for the day. And the Niners have a bye, as do the Saints, who we will see next week against the Seahawks. Marquee games this weekend. Probably Chargers-Ravens, battle of two of the best quarterbacks in the game so far this year, and two teams that are both pretty exciting to watch. Cowboys-Patriots as well. Raiders-Broncos, first game as a head coach for Rich Bisaccia.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, another milestone night last night as the Kraken get the first win in franchise history. 4-3 in Nashville. Brandon Tanev leading the way with a pair of goals. That was a Kraken team that I think we were expecting to see. Much better last night. I was trying to keep it positive after the first game because, you know, it was more about the excitement than anything else, but just didn't think they played very well. Well, that changed in Nashville. They brought physicality, they brought speed, they cleaned up the defensive mistakes, they were active, and it translated. Even the chemistry issues that seemed to plague them in Vegas just totally disappeared. What I love was how their hustle led to results. Vince Dunn laid two big hits, ruffled some feathers, led to a fight, which led to a power play, which leads to the first goal of the game from McCann. Newcomer Alex Barry-Boulet used his speed, right? Skating through the neutral zone, forced a tripping penalty, led to the second goal from Brandon Tanev. Work hard, get rewarded in hockey. I love that. I think we're also starting to get a little sense for how Dave Hakstol sees his roster. Philip Grubauer got his second straight start, maybe to let him start to get into a groove. He was very good in the third period. And Jeremy Lauzon got the start over Hayden Fleury for the final D spot. Carson Soucy made his debut and I thought played pretty well.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, and an instant classic by the Bay last night. Dodgers advance to the NLCS. Cody Bellinger broke a 1-1 tie in the ninth inning. RBI single. Max Scherzer came in to pick up the save, so the Giants wasted an epic performance from Logan Webb, who went seven innings, allowed just one run, but that's unfortunately not the story today. It all ended on a blown call. Wilmer Flores called out on a check swing. The first base ump ruled that he swung, and it is not challengeable. Now, that is not exactly the same as what I called the second most frustrating rule in sports the other day.
It was close.
Which is when the home plate umpire rules that you swung and you don't even get an appeal. But it does seem ridiculous that that wouldn't be challengeable. You can challenge whether or not the guy comes off the bag on a slide into second or third, which I think it just completely defeats the whole purpose of that rule. but you can't challenge something that upon replay is really easy to see. I don't get that.
And in the biggest moment?
Yeah, it's too bad. But hey, them's the breaks. Dodgers move on. Red Sox, Astros will start tonight in Houston. Chris Sale and Framber Valdez in that one. Meanwhile, Tom Brady last night kept the train rolling. Tampa held off a late Philly run to improve to 5-1. 28-22 your final. Brady throws for 297 and a pair of scores. Jalen Hurts threw for one touchdown, ran for two in a losing effort. And oh, by the way, Richard Sherman's return to the NFL has been cut short. He left that game last night with a hamstring injury, did not return, and is not expected to for a while. Those are three things you need to know. We do it every hour at quarter past.
Good text from the 253, and it's a question, a hockey question when it comes to fighting and physicality and the sacrifice. You mentioned last night that Giordano mentioned it in his postgame, that he was the hero of the night or something. Is there a time when it goes too far, or it's an unnecessary fight and it ruins things for you? Like, with the fact that it's a sacrifice, and I forget the other word that we were using the other day, is there a time when it backfires?
Yes,
I guess
absolutely. And you see it with kind of the players who can do, who are both scorers and fighters, right? Guys who can do a little bit of both, a big physical power forward type. And you get into the postseason and everybody tries to bait them into the fight because they want to get them off the ice for 5 minutes.
Got it.
So that would be going too far in the wrong spot. Also, another example would be, you know, getting the instigator penalty, right? That's what happened to the guy last night for
Nashville.
Nashville. He came in and fought at the wrong time, and they gave him a 2-minute roughing call on top of the 5 minutes for fighting, because there was no reason for him to come in as the third guy in and have that fight there.
Sure. My girlfriend brought it up last night. She's like, for a game that's all about respect, it seems weird that fights are so praised.
Why?
I don't know. That's what I asked.
No, it's old school. I mean, I think that's part of the respect. I mean, you know, yeah, it is about respect, but you respect the tradition of the game. And unlike other sports, hockey has a tradition of fighting. It's written into the rules, right? And I know you always get this, well, they don't allow it in basketball, and they don't allow it in baseball, this and that. Like, yeah, all right. They don't. They don't allow skating in basketball either, but like you can in hockey. Like different sports have different rules. You're not allowed to take a bat onto the ice, but you are allowed to fight.
So what we learned,
those are the rules.
We learned is Dunn is not our enforcer, is what we learned?
No, that's not his job. No. But okay. Hey, good for him, man. He took the punishment last night. He stood up for himself. And I think that you know, if you listen to those two things from Hackstall and from Giordano, you can hear a little bit about what's really going on in the room. First of all, you hear Hackstall mention Brandon Tanev as their leading scorer with a laugh. Brandon Tanev is not going to lead this team in scoring, trust me. He is a third-line
winger. Well, someone in the background goes, like we all expected.
Exactly, right? Like, he's cracking wise at Tanev for leading the team in scoring.
Cracking wise.
Yeah, there you go, because that's probably not going to happen. Secondly, at the end of his speech, who does he throw to? He doesn't throw to the player of the game. He throws to his captain. You take it from here. And Giordano's the one who gets the puck. He's the one who gets the reward. And all the players know that and accept it. Brandon Tanev was the star of the game, or whatever you want to say, with his two goals. Or Philip Grubauer, who won his first game in goal. He doesn't get the puck. Goes to the captain. And the captain gets to decide what to do with it. Who does he say is the player of the game? Well, he says the hero is Vince Dunn. The captaincy means something. And good on Hackstall. He knows how to do this. He's been a coach before. He's been in the game forever. Who does he send it to? Send it to the captain, and let the captain kind of go from there. It's just a different culture. And I thought it was awesome.
I love getting into the onion on this too.
It's really fun. Hockey's got a lot of layers to peel back too. There's the excitement you see on the ice, and there's just a really cool culture of sacrifice off of it. All right, coming up next, it's harder for Jerry DePoto to watch the postseason this year than it's been, but he does have a rooting interest. You'll hear who he's rooting for, plus the possibilities of Julio Rodriguez making the opening day roster. There's a lot in there. Stick around for Jerry next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Jerry DePoto joins us every Thursday for the Jerry DePoto Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Hi, Jerry. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, Mike. I'm traveling today, so committed to being here from the airport.
Well, thank you. That is incredibly nice of you. That means the world to us. Traveling for fun or for business?
Somewhere in between. I'm headed to a reunion of one of my college baseball teams to celebrate with people I haven't seen in a lot of years.
That's awesome. Where'd you go to school? Where did you play?
Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia, which is not easy to get to from Seattle, I find.
I would imagine. I don't want to even know how many different flights it's going to take for you to get there. But cool, that sounds kind of awesome. Are there other guys who made the league and or still work in baseball that you'll see there?
No one that played in the big leagues, but quite a few guys that played minor league baseball. And my roommate, who is going into the Baseball Hall of Fame, is an executive with the Nationals. And my other roommate actually birthed a major leaguer. Well, I guess his wife did, Chad Pinder. His dad was one of my college roommates. And so it all comes around. We're connected 6 degrees to baseball.
That's really cool. Well, it's too bad you weren't at the ballpark yesterday. The media was there taking some batting practice, catching some fly balls. You might have found Justin. He might have been your, an
infield. That was my day. Yeah. That was my day.
Played a little third base at Community College in Shoreline. You might have done some good scouting yesterday, Jerry.
Well, I have to say that despite the fact I was not down on the field front and center while I was taking care of staff contracts and such up in the box, we were looking out the window.
Oh, no.
And had a pretty good view of what was going on. And,
yeah.
And I assessed who had game and who might be a little bit short.
Okay, good. Well, unfortunately, Angie Mentink wasn't there to show us all up this time because that's sort of how it went the last time we were over there. You've also, I'm sure, gotten a chance to watch some of the postseason here. I think it's been great. Great baseball to watch over the course of the last week. What is it like for you to watch postseason baseball?
You know, this year, maybe more than most, it was a little sour for me the first couple of days. But like any baseball fan, you start getting involved or invested again, which I think is natural. And it's the drama of the postseason is why we do what we do. It's to get to the top of the mountain. And, you know, obviously now you've got five teams left and they're close. They're where we want to be a year from now.
Can you find yourself watching? Do you end up with a rooting interest in one team or another as you're watching a game?
Yeah, mostly teams with whom I've worked or people with whom I've worked at this point. You know, I probably will always have a soft spot for the Mets in the National League because that was my team as a kid. But generally speaking, now just the people that you work with. And I guess on the board, quite a few people in Boston that I've worked with through the years. So I guess if I had a rooting interest, it would probably be the Red Sox. But I just want to see a great baseball game more than anything.
What'd you think of the play the other day with the right fielder kicking the ball out? I mean, the ball bounces off the wall, then the ground, then the right fielder, then goes back over the wall. Is that the rule you think they're going to have to change? Because the idea of making the runner only advance two bases just seemed wrong.
It does seem wonky, but one of those things that when it happens once in a blue moon or generationally like this, you probably don't go through a heck of a lot of brain cells trying to figure out how to change it. You just chalk it up to, wow, that was a moment. And I don't know another way you can really deal with that because it is, you do have to limit the way players can advance in both directions, actually, because there's, you want to avoid any type of nefarious behavior to try to adapt to a rule.
Well, that's what I was worried about is that, you know, now that other people know about it, in theory, a right fielder or another outfielder could kick that ball or push it out of over the wall. Oh, sorry, it went out of bounds. I guess you're going to have to stay at third instead of scoring, right?
I think like so many things that in baseball, and here I'm an advocate for what umpires do or have done. It's really hard to get it right 97-98% of the time, and they manage that somehow. But leaving it to their judgment in these situations, what's right, what's wrong, I think is the only logical way to handle it. Give them the authority to manage that moment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The other thing I think we've seen in the postseason is just how the stars have really carried their teams. I was kind of going through the box scores yesterday morning and after watching the games, and it's like, oh, man. All of the great Astro players each had multiple RBI nights. And, you know, you had Mookie Betts and Corey Seager carrying the Dodgers. And it was Freddie Freeman hitting a home run that put the Dodgers ahead. How important are those great players in the postseason? And is it even heightened then compared to the regular season?
I think that's it. You know, if we go back through, you know, the coffers of our mind, that's what we remember from watching baseball growing up. And you know, the great moments for the great players. I will say that baseball has a long history of let's say the lesser knowns who rise up in October, you know, the Brian Doyles and the Buddy Biancolanas. But by and large, it's the big moments for the Reggie Jacksons and the, you know, roughly anybody who currently hits for the Astros or Dodgers. But those players, that's why they're stars, because they drive lineups at the crucial points in the season, and this is that.
Yeah, Joe Carter hitting his home run. I mean, yeah, I think you're right. A lot of the great memories of childhood baseball certainly come from that. You mentioned in your sort of postseason, end of the season wrap up press conference that, and I think I get your quote right, that you have your bench set. What exactly does that mean in terms of what you're looking for in the offseason?
No, I just think our bench players currently play for the Mariners. You know, one of the things that we want to make sure that we honor is, you know, through the last 3 years, we have built a really likable core of players in the big leagues. We also have a pretty robust farm system that's developing talent. And while we don't want to go into a season holding spots, so to speak, we want to put the most competitive major league team on the field that we can. We do want to provide an avenue for those young players to continue to grow and get opportunity. And that can be seen entering through part-time roles or supporting roles rather than, you know, just waiting to see when a young player may show up. We don't want to block them from the opportunity. And that could include players currently on the team, you know, guys like a Dylan Moore or Jake Fraley, et cetera, or it could be players from the minor leagues. And we want to make sure that that's fluid and then we don't lock in. Or lock out those young players.
Well, and then I guess the follow-up to that or what would go with that is that means that your shopping list includes, you know, starters, right? Guys that are going to have a significant role on your team beginning in the next season.
That's the goal. And we're going out and going to search all the markets. We want to add talent. And, you know, I did mention that our priority is making our lineup longer. We want to be a more consistent offensive team than we were this past year. And, you know, as the year went along, we got better and the lineup methodically got longer. And now we would like to go ahead and add something to the middle of it, you know, or to key portions or parts of our lineup that can start driving run scoring in a different direction. We think, you know, that, and in addition to, you know, building up some, you know, starting pitching depth is a focus for us this offseason.
You mentioned Julio Rodriguez during that press conference also, and wondering if he could end up not just on your team and contributing next year, but maybe even on an opening day start role for him. In order to get there, what does he need to do between now and then?
I mean, there's not a lot he could do on the field, frankly. He had a wonderful minor league season. He's right now about 1,000 plate appearances as a minor leaguer, which for, you know, the elite level players, that's about the time they get on the major league radar. It's sometime, you know, between 1,000 and 1,200 is when they start to pop up. Julio's in that zone, and he had a terrific Olympics. He had an outstanding season at two different levels. He'll come to major league camp with an opportunity to make the club. As the defining decision for Julio will primarily be based on how he performs early in spring, in addition to whatever we do between now and then, because we do want to add to this team and we don't want to forsake the opportunity to get deeper. And if that happens to slow down the arrival of some players, then that's something we have to understand is part of the price of doing business this offseason. But that could affect Julio's arrival.
When you mention 1,000 plate appearances, I just happened to click over to the page for Wander Franco, who had 950 at bats. I don't see the plate appearances, but it's got to be a few more than that. And before coming up to the majors and everything he did this year, and, you know, trying to find comps for what we could end up seeing with Julio and others. How important is that international scouting element of what you guys do in building this thing? We hear so much about the draft, trades, free agency, et cetera, but that international scouting portion sure seems to yield some really impressive, important players.
Some of the best players in the world live outside the United States, many actually. And, you know, we're to the point now where I think we're north of 40% of the players in our league are not domestic born U.S. players. And we, to answer the question on scouting, we have
built what I think is a really strong international scouting crew led by Frankie Thon and Kevin Fox, Andrew Herrera. They do a wonderful job, but we've realized a lot of talent from that space, including players like Julio and Nuelve Marte. And we will continue to really beat the bushes in that space. We think that is the next great frontier in scouting and player acquisition. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk in recent years about the potential for an international draft. So we've spent a lot of our time focusing on how we can be more prepared, you know, in the non-traditional or typical countries. You know, Dominican Republic, Venezuela are generally robust in talent. But there's a lot of talent coming out of countries like Curacao and countries in Europe and the Far East that really haven't been scouted in a thorough way. And we're trying to change the way we do that right now, actually.
Andrew Jones, Curacao, right? Wasn't he from there?
Yes. Andrew Jones, Xander Bogaerts, Shelton Simmons, Jurks and Profar. It's really been a cascade of really good players that came after Andrew. It's a wonderful talent.
That's really cool. That's a pretty darn good list of players. So, Jerry, thank you. Let us let you go. Enjoy your reunion. Have fun, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right, good stuff. Love talking to Jerry, and glad we can do that every week. If you ever miss that interview, you get a chance to just go find it online. You can download the podcast at 710sports.com, or even better, go subscribe at Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. Just get it right on your phone, as easy as possible.
What's the rating? Have you checked it? You said you're obsessed.
Yeah, I'm obsessively checking. We're down a little bit. We went from 4.7 to 4.6. There were a couple, but mostly it was because of you, I think. There were some fairly angry Justin Barnes.
My pineapple on pizza rant, was that it?
I don't know if it was that. It was more like the new guy's terrible, that guy should never speak.
Are you sure it wasn't? I mean, you got pretty much exclusively hate for your Cam Newton take.
Oh, it could have been that too. That's true. Yeah, so that combination of Justin talking and my take on Cam Newton could have had something to do with it. I don't know. I do check it every day. Yes. I check it just to see.
It seems like a totally healthy, reasonable thing to do.
It's like checking your weight every day.
I do that also. Yeah. But I have to do that, though, more. That's just accountability. How much time did we spend talking about accountability yesterday? A lot, right? Oh, you weren't here. We spent a lot of time talking about accountability.
How ironic.
Maury, you missed the whole accountability conversation.
I was at a work-related event.
All right. Well, we were talking a lot about accountability yesterday because of Gruden by the way, I think we have to stop calling this the John Gruden situation. This is becoming very quickly the Bruce Allen situation.
Yeah, John Gruden's a catastrophe of the Bruce Allen situation.
I kind of think so. I mean, what Gruden said is horrible, but the more we read through this and the more we learn about this, this is the Bruce Allen situation. Bruce Allen, who was the president in Washington at the time, seems to be I don't want to say a bigger issue because that kind of downplays what happened to Gruden or what Gruden said, rather, and I don't want to downplay it, but the more you read about Bruce Allen, the uglier it gets. And I can't get over the fact that he was the president of the team sending pictures through email of team employees topless wearing just bikinis. That's bikini bottoms. That's nuts. But then you're finding out some of the information of his connections with Jeff Pasch, whose name you may have heard before. His name comes up came up a lot during the lockout, right? As the NFL owners were pulling the most ridiculous stunt of all time. Jeff Pasch was the guy leading the negotiation for the owners. And it turns out he and Bruce Allen are thick as thieves, sending each other these emails, covering for each other. I mean, he's covering for Bruce. Oh, I wouldn't worry about that.
He doesn't have anything to worry about with the cheerleader sexual harassment allegation.
Joking about the league's diversity efforts.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
There's stand up, dude.
Joke in there about how their efforts to make the hail to the you know what's appealed more to a Latino audience. And he says, well, there won't be as many people once they build the wall. I mean, there's like, it's one thing after another. And yes, it will all eventually lead up to Daniel Snyder, and he will be a big part of the problem. But as of right now, this sure looks like the Bruce Allen situation just as much, if not more, than the John Gruden one.
Well, and Jeff Pasch is Roger Goodell's right-hand man. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the whole thing is just the NFL has some toxic people in it from the top down.
I am shocked.
Shocked that there's gambling in this establishment.
Oh, I know.
You know who? Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where all of this continues to go, because names will just continue to come out and emails will continue to come out as they keep looking through it. But more, we were talking about accountability yesterday as a part of this, and the only way that I can keep myself accountable to eating like, you know, a normal human as opposed to the way I want to eat is to weigh myself every day. Because if I get off that train, the next thing you know, it's like, oh, I'm up 4 pounds. I'm up 4 pounds. I'm up 7 pounds. I'm up 12. I'm up 25 pounds. And it can happen like that. So I have to weigh myself in order to feel like guilty enough to not eat the way I want to eat. Does that make sense?
That sounds
You're
intense.
A prisoner.
I am. I love to eat. It's probably my favorite thing in the world.
I do too. I couldn't weigh myself every day, but luckily I have a dog that needs to run, so I run with her.
I have found that as I've gotten older, I cannot outrun a bad diet.
Well, I'm sorry that we were just talking to her about Seattle Restaurant Week during the break, and I'm just
Thanks
ruining
a lot,
this for
Justin.
You.
Yeah,
once again,
making me think about all the best restaurants I love eating out there.
We just lost more points on our ratings.
All right, are you guys? Yeah, you know, stop talking about food. I hear about Geno Smith. All right, well, you want to talk Geno Smith? Let's do that. What are we going to get from Geno Smith this weekend? Do you feel good about it? Do you feel good about what they can put around him? Do you feel like he can help them win? I'm not going to take calls necessarily, but if you guys want to jump into this, text us at 206-421-3776. Please do. 206-421-3776. How do you help Geno Smith win this game?
Play better defense.
Right?
Like, I'm much more concerned with that than I am with Geno Smith right now.
Get Chris Carson in.
Don't ask him to, like, score 35 points.
Yes.
Right? Hold this team under 30 at the very least. It's not like they're they have all kinds of offensive problems. Hold them under 30. Just do something to help your offense not have to score so many points. And, oh, by the way, while you're out there doing that, maybe run the ball. Let Chris Carson get involved. I sure hope he can play. Shane Waldron knows that's going to be part of the key.
Run game is always going to be a key point in trying to get things going. And, you know, however that plays out throughout the course of a game, you know, by the end of the game, wanting to be that balanced attack. And a lot of things play into that. And being able to run the ball early is obviously going to help us out this week as it would any other week. So we'll stay committed to our core beliefs. And then, again, just keeping looking for that consistency throughout four quarters.
Do you think they can do that? You think
yes.
they can do that? You think they can run the ball effectively for an entire game?
I think they all know that the pressure in the spotlight is very different this week and that they have to step up to the challenge and will win the challenge. I say yes.
That would be problematic for me if that happens. If it's a matter of needing to step up.
I don't want to say
about,
it's like they've been
stepping up
back.
Last week in your division game against the Rams.
And that's what I mean. I don't mean to imply that they weren't.
Yeah. Well, but unfortunately, that is kind of the other side of implying that they can. If you can, why haven't you?
Fair.
Right? I mean, totally. Like, that's always one of those, like, there's a double-edged sword to that. Oh, we really rose to the occasion. Cool. How come you didn't do it last week? Like, I understand that that's sort of the human nature element. I've heard that conversation before. But I do think there's also the, like, okay, well, if you can step up, last week was kind of the time to do that.
Sure, but this is the snap into a new gear you didn't know you had mode, maybe. Like when you hear about people getting in crashes on the freeway and somebody lifts a car. Well,
right.
Why couldn't you lift a car yesterday?
So you think that it's that this is the ultimate adrenaline rush, being stuck with Geno Smith
I don't know, the Seahawks to
lift cars.
Characterize it that way.
Well,
but maybe it is. They dig deeper and find something they didn't know they had. They play at a different speed because they don't have Russ, and it's more of a leadership role for them now, and there's a lot more on the line for them now.
It is interesting to see who will emerge out of this, right? There's a vacuum, essentially, whether it's a talent vacuum or a power vacuum or a play calling vacuum. There's some level of vacuum when you remove Russell Wilson from the equation, and who steps up into it, right? Who fills that empty space left by Russell Wilson? I think you see that often. Basketball is probably the best sport for that, right? Where you've got a guy on your team who's your scorer. That's what he does, right? He scores the most points, partly because he's good at it, but partly because the game is set up for him to do that. And then he gets hurt, and it does open things up for other people to score. Maybe somebody who's more of a defensive stopper who steps up into that role. It's possible that you know, they get more touches and they get more license to go at the rim, and the next thing you know, that guy ends up with more points that day. Can you do that in football? I mean, certainly if DK Metcalf is out and Freddie Swain ends up becoming your go-to receiver, it can work that way. But without Russell Wilson in there, who can possibly step into that vacuum? Who can help them the most? Is there a player that can step up the most to help them this weekend?
Are you talking offense right now?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just talking about the team in general.
I mean, to me, you're looking at probably DK and Tyler, because as much as we want to get the run game going, with Carson missing practice yesterday and the Steelers being one of the tougher run defending teams in the league, I think maybe it's not deep bombs down the field, but I think you're looking for the receivers to step up.
Okay. So there's an option. Is it the receivers? Are they the guys who step up into that vacuum? I love the idea. The issue with it, of course, is they're the most dependent on the quarterback, right? Geno's going to have to be accurate. Geno's going to have to constantly make the right decisions. They got to get open, but then Geno's got to get them the ball, something that he has struggled with over the course of his career.
So maybe that's more on Waldron, but I think there's ways that he can game plan to where it's not like he has to be Russ and you know, send a 67-yard bomb down the field to Lockett.
Well, that's the name I think I would be pointing at. I think you hit the nail on the head. Who can step up into that vacuum? Shane Waldron. I know he's only been here for 5 games, but hey, Shane, here you go. Like, it's up to you to find a way to survive without Russell Wilson. It's up to you to scheme guys open. It's up to you to be creative. It's up to you to surprise Pittsburgh. Yeah, the offensive line is going to have to do their job. I mean, everybody's got to do their job. But who can step up into that vacuum and help Geno Smith the most and help live without Russell Wilson? Yeah, I think it's your offensive coordinator. I think it's what Shane Waldron can do. Salk, if you say Cam Newton, I'm changing the station. No, it's not Cam Newton. I promise. He's not here.
That horse is dead. We've moved on.
Salk, if you say it's Cam Newton, I'm giving you a 1-star review on your Apple Podcast reviews. All right, no, I won't say his name again. I promise. We'll just call him Superman from now on. Would that make it better? Should I just call him Superman?
I'll allow it.
All right. Coming up next, I do know one thing and one thing only about Geno Smith. I'll tell you what it is next. Mike Salk Show here on 710 ESPN Seattle.